Today we're speaking to JV, otherwise known as Mixter Hyde, a prolific podcaster and podcast host. Hi, JV.
Hey, Chelsea.
Or should I call you... Do you want JV. Me to address you as JV?
Yeah, that works.
Okay, great. So you and I have actually spoken before. You interviewed me for your podcast a few months ago. And it was something like a 3-hour interview, sometimes very silly and sometimes serious. And the whole thing is kind of a blur to me. But I liked you so much, and I really enjoyed getting to know you on that occasion. And I'm happy to talk to you again now.
Oh, yay. It was like one of the most fun interviews I've ever had. It was really great.
Oh, that's
it was a great
sweet.
Time.
Thank you. You're actually being interviewed today, not in your capacity as a podcaster, but because of a personal matter. I saw you speak up about having a unique dual experience of being both sexually assaulted and being falsely accused of sexual assault. So when I heard that, I really wanted to understand that story and what it was like for you and learn from that experience. So I just want to say thank you for coming on to speak about something so personal.
Absolutely. No problem at all. So I figure with that, I should probably explain the situations that Please. Occurred. Leading up to there. So, which one to start with? I suppose the one that comes as most as a shock to most people is the fact that I've been assaulted at all. Like, that's a thing that surprises people, which, well, anyway, whatever.
Why,
statistics
because
and
you're
things.
A man? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, yeah.
I'll,
that's
I'll edit
fine.
That out.
As That I'm coded as male.
That
we can
coded
go with
as
that.
Male.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I get coded as male. I identify as genderqueer. But like, that's one of those things that, that people just don't like think about a lot. But yeah, that's, yeah. So in terms of what happened there, it's, well, sadly, it has been multiple times. I've been sexually assaulted multiple times. However, the main, when I made that post in the group, the one that I, the specific moment that I was thinking of, was actually the exact same situation as the time that I also wound up being accused. And that was a few years ago, and it was, my ex-boyfriend from high school, by the time this comes out, I will be 28. I turned 28 tomorrow.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. this was like the person that I dated when I was 16 and, also wound up being my prom date. So like we had a long history at that point. Most of it was not great. Just in general, not like a, abusive prior to that, but just not great, not a good connection.
Not necessarily a healthy dynamic.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. And out of the blue one night, he calls me and is super upset. He's like crying on the phone and basically mentions, I'm going to try to summarize it so that we have time to discuss things, but basically said that, you know, he was going to kill himself. So I, or well, was thinking of killing himself and thought that that was like the best option that he had, which I was like, no, that's not the best option. You probably shouldn't be alone right now. So,
right. It was a cry for help.
Exactly. So I figured I'd go and meet him. So I did. When I met up with him, he seemed a little off, not just emotionally, but like, I guess the way I would describe it is he seemed like he was high. That's what it seemed like to me. I don't know whether or not he was high, but whatever. In that particular case, he... Oh, dear. Ah, sorry, I'm stumbling again.
It's okay.
Ah.
It's a really sensitive subject, and so I completely understand how it's not an entirely comfortable narrative to just spill forth. So take your time.
Yeah. I pick him up, he gets in my car, and we drive around for a little bit. I'm trying to calm him down. in general, like, a thing about me, just to sort of know, is I'm not super great at comforting people. Like, I'm actually pretty bad at it. I just sort of sit there awkwardly, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know what to say or do. I'm just sort of gonna be here as a presence, which works well enough, but so I was just driving around, focusing on driving, and just sort of letting him talk. And eventually I pull into, well, he asked me to pull into a parking lot. So I chose one that was across from this like old folks home. And we talked a little bit more, and he asked me for a hug, but obviously given my car at the time had like a weird middle thing. So the easiest way to do that was to either get out or go into the back seat. So I went into the back seat with him and gave him a hug. We had earlier on a few weeks prior, discussed the fact that I no longer wanted to have sex with him. I did when I was younger, sure. As in, I wanted to when I was younger. I, at that point, didn't, because I was seeing someone and just didn't want to. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the hug went on for a while, but that turned into him kissing me, which I was not, like, I wasn't too upset about. He was actually the person I had my first kiss with anyway, so it was sort of like a little memory moment. But that then turned into, I don't really want to get into the gorier of the details, sure. But that turned into him assaulting me in my own car. Afterwards, I dropped him off at his house and went home. I was in a lot of pain, size-wise, not to be super graphic, but size-wise, he's rather large, and I was the quote-unquote receiver, I suppose you could say, and that was actually one of the reasons that I didn't want to have sex with him in the first place, was because it was honestly too big, and I just, it, no.
Painful.
Exactly. And that led to tearing. I don't know why, like, anyway.
That's okay.
That led to tearing in that region. And I went to the hospital because I realized I was bleeding. So I went to the hospital, and that I didn't know at the time, even though I had been assaulted before, the previous times I hadn't gone to the hospital or anything. But this time, because I was bleeding so much, I felt like I had to. But when the doctor asked me why I was there and what had happened, I told him, I didn't tell him that I'd been assaulted. But he did ask me if I was gay, and I told him yes. So he then proceeded to say, like, oh, well, this is common with gay sex in general, so we'll give you this, and then we'll have you out of here. It's fine. No, like, inspection as to, like, oh, there seems to be, like, more damage here than there should be. I don't know why that is. Like, none of that on the doctor's part, just right on to, oh, this is common for you gays. So, so after that, I went back home and like slept for a bit, and then woke up and sent my ex a text. I was like, that was not okay. You raped me. I sent him that in a text, and then added, like, look, I'm not going to go to the police about it, but, like, dude, you need to get help. Like, you need to seek help. Like, this is not okay. You're starting to hurt people. Like, that's just unacceptable. which he responded to by accusing me of assaulting him because he was in a vulnerable state, a vulnerable emotional state, as he put it. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Then he spread that around, actually spread that on Facebook. And I lost a job working with, I lost one of my contracts working with kids at that time. I wound up losing a bunch of friends, and like to this day, going up to that part of the county, I still feel uncomfortable going up there. Now he never went to like the police with that, obvious, like, which is obvious to me because he knew that he was like, he knew it was bullshit. He just didn't want the blame to be on him for what he did. But So that's the sort of main situation. Though the other thing that always springs to mind when I'm thinking of sexual assault and all of the attention it is getting in the media and things like that. Back in November, for one of my shows, I needed to cast a character, and I'd sort of cast my net a little bit wide and around my county, and a person that I knew, a person that I was friends with, said that they would be willing to do it. This person was a professional actor, so I figured, sure, I'll take them up on it. And I set up a time to record with him at his house, which I won't go into like all of the full details, but it was like basically it was everything except assault, like all of the possible sexual misconduct, with the exception of actual assault, including groping, exposing oneself to another person, and like all of that. And I was pretty shaken up about it, but because that was in November and it was sort of during the movement happening, I went to the police station to tell the officers, this happened to me, and this happened to me, and I need to file a police report, because like this is like I felt super unsafe, and it was really not okay. So I went in and I told the police officer what happened, and the officer laughed at me and didn't file the report. So that wound
laughed
up not...
He literally laughed at you?
Yep.
Wait.
Yep. Yeah. Honestly, this is not... Like, this sounds... Like, it sounds... really awful. I know, like, because like these are the very people who their job is to listen and like understand, like listen and deal with these situations, but fundamentally just to listen and to then do their job of like figuring out what happened and following up. I have a theory on this a little bit, but it's I guess it's not so much a theory, but it's sort of a like this is something that I have internalized about this in terms of like the conversation surrounding assault and like and my and where my place is in that. The officer felt entirely comfortable laughing at me because the conversation about men being assaulted doesn't happen. And thus thought that it is a thing that doesn't, like, that's a thing that can't really happen. So, so you could just easily write it off. Whereas if I had gone in there and I was a woman, I think that I would have actually been listened to. I don't know that they would have believed me, but I think they would have listened and not actually
treated you with more respect.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
A slight bit more respect, not a whole lot, and still like so many other problems on top of that, but like that.
Right, you wouldn't have received the same reaction.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually, it speaks to another question. I've kind of been jotting down questions that I want to ask you if you've been speaking, and one of them pertains to that, whether or not you thought the doctor you saw on the night you were assaulted and went to the ER, I was going to ask you how you thought that experience might have been different if you either were a woman or hadn't identified as homosexual, because you mentioned that you didn't describe it as assault.
No. Earlier on in the intake process, it had come up, like, what is your sexual orientation? Like, in paperwork and things, and I had checked off that I was gay. So when I came in with that issue, he had that information already that I was gay. Mm-hmm. He didn't ask me if I had been assaulted. That wasn't even a question. He had asked me what had happened, and I told him that, I don't even remember what I told him, but I know I said something about, I think it's pretty clear that something went wrong in this area or something like that. Like, 'cause when I'm really nervous and stressed out, I'll usually crack some kind of joke. And for some reason, that's the one that is, like, coming to mind right now. And I don't think that was exactly what I said, but it was something like that. But it wasn't, I didn't make it clear that it was an assault. So I will own up to the fact with that one that I didn't explicitly say that it was assault. But by that point, I already didn't feel comfortable explaining it and sort of going into all that.
But like, if you exactly don't want to share that on that night, that, you know, is totally understandable. And also, you know, I understand why your recollection on that evening might not be entirely clear, because when traumatic things happen, you know, memories are compromised. So,
yeah, you know, I've done a lot of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was going to say I've done a lot of like healing surrounding that particular situation. So like the actual description of the situation, it's difficult to say verbally a lot of the time, but I sent it to you in a message so you would know what I was talking about in terms of the situation. But I typing it is much easier for me. Actually, one of the first things I did when I got home after the hospital was write down what happened. I didn't write down what I like what was said between the doctor and me, because I was still more focused on the fact that I had been assaulted more than anything else. So that tends to get, that's a little, a lot.
It is a lot. Let's back up to the assault itself. Do you think there was any, and I'm not asking you for, you know, details or any of the physical, descriptors, but was there any chance that he thought it was a consensual encounter?
No.
Okay.
The thing that I left out of that was that the threat to kill himself came back during what was happening. When I had said no, I really don't want to do this. I'm not comfortable. I'm seeing someone. After saying all of the, like any time I would say that, he'd be like, "If you don't, I'm gonna just kill myself."
Whoa.
Which. Yeah.
That is that's a new kind of force that,
yeah,
not new, but it's definitely not one that's been on, you know, my mind very recently. But yeah, that is force and in a
coercion.
Wow. Mm. Okay. Well, that's disturbing. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that happened. I mean, I can't even imagine the amount of emotional conflict you must have experienced as that's happening and as you're receiving that message.
Yeah. The sad thing is that, well, by that point, I had, as I said before, been assaulted multiple times. So by that point, like the like emotional shock of being assaulted wasn't really there because it had happened before. multiple times. So the shock was mainly due to the fact that I didn't expect it, because this guy prior to this night was not a violent dude. Did he cheat? Yes. Did he lie? Yes. Was he like also on drugs at that point? Yes. Actually wound up dropping out of college for that very reason. But like, he hadn't at that point been violent or manipulative in any sort of way. So that was really, that part was the part that was really shocking to me, and the reason that I like couldn't respond in any other way. Well, I mean, also, well, there are other reasons why I couldn't like respond in any other way, like because I wouldn't have been able to anyway, just given the situation, given that like I was terrified. But I don't know how to, like, it's a difficult thing to explain, but like I wasn't shocked that it was happening because it had happened before. I wasn't pleased, obviously, but like I wasn't shocked. I was afraid. I was a bunch of other things, but shock was not one of them.
Do you think that same-sex sexual assault is under-discussed?
Basically, yes. I think that it is not discussed often enough. I've had, okay, so another thing that has happened in my life. So I mentioned earlier that I occasionally teach. I occasionally have teaching jobs here and there. I'm licensed actually to teach sex health, which happened actually after that incident, but that's not really related to the story. It's just timeline-wise, that was more recent. But I got trained to like do these sex health classes. I got trained to them for parents and for children. I normally prefer to do the classes for young folk, because honestly, they're easier. They're easier to do because I'm a younger person. I don't have kids of my own, so trying to talk to parents about it, I run into the barrier of like, you don't have kids though, so like, how could you actually advise me on this? Which is a little bit fair, because there's a lot of stresses to being a parent that I don't get. Okay, so I'm running this workshop for the parents, and we're just doing basic introductions and names. We've literally been in this room for exactly 5 minutes, and I've talked to nobody up to that point. So we're going around, and we get to this one woman, and says, "Hi, I'm a mom, and my student is in, like, I have two kids, and my son is in sixth grade, and like my daughter is like in eighth." And and then she mentioned that she was a sexual assault victim, or rather sexual assault survivor. Survivor being the word that I'm putting on it. She had said victim. So okay, just clarifying there. And that one of the questions I had asked was, and what do you want to get out of this training? And she had said, like, I want to be able to teach my daughter to be empowered and teach my son to respect other people's boundaries, which, like, in theory, that sounds really great, right? Just as a statement, that mm-hmm. sounds good, except for the fact that both of those things should be taught to both people. To only teach them one and not the other is to set both of them up for failure. So which I said in the training, but I worded it a little differently, so it didn't come off as like as harsh as I just said it. But, right. So I mean, like, not to like really derail this, but, when we talk about you know, empowerment, it's really important to empower both groups in understanding what they're comfortable with and being able to vocalize what they are comfortable with and what they are not comfortable with, and to internalize all of that. which led to this woman proceeding to yell at me for a very long while during my own training
about
basically she called me everything from like a men's rights activist to like just to a bunch of other things. Like, it was insane. Said that I wasn't that I wasn't a feminist, and like just a whole bunch of other things. And in order to get her to stop, in order to like finally just put it to bed, like why I had said what I had said about literal gender equality, gender equality in education, literally what I was talking about. In order to get her to stop, I had to tell her, like, I said that because I am a sexual assault survivor myself, and I've never received, I got the lesson of respect other people's boundaries, but like, I didn't get the one of like, I never got the one of people need to respect mine, and I should have gotten that too. That shut her up, finally. Okay. Literally, she just shut up and was like, and sat back. But I shouldn't have had to do that in a professional setting wherein I was training, first and foremost. Like, that was ridiculous. And I actually haven't done that particular training since then. But like, I was like, I actually haven't worked with that school since then, actually, because the principal was also literally in the room when I had to say that. And
wow.
Like, so
do you live in a small town?
I do. Yeah. That's another, that is actually a very important point, is I do live in a very small town.
I'm picking up on that.
Yeah. I do live in a small town, but my ex actually lives on the other side of the county. So he lives about an hour away. But that's, so that's sort of like an hour north for me, but this was like in my hometown. These are people that I see often, and yeah. So that happened. But the reason that I bring that up is that the conversation around violence and like around sexual violence and sexual harassment and assault is often very one-sided, and certainly the like, okay,
gender specific. Yeah.
Yeah. Like okay. The statistics that I have read, the ones that I find the most salient for this particular point are, is the ones for how many children, under the age of 18 are going to experience sexual assault at some point. I got the stats from Rain. I don't really remember what they are off the top of my head right now, but it was something like for women in general, it's 1 in 3 women. Right. So, right. So I'll just use that for this moment. Cause I remember that one. It's 1 in 3 women. And for men, it's 1 in 10. But that one was the child statistic. So under the age of 18, which, well, yeah, anyway. So those two numbers are vastly different. Of course, one of them is 10%. The other is 33. Sure.
Yeah, but 10% is still a really big number.
Exactly. And that was literally the next thing I was going to say. It's like, we do focus a lot on the 33% of women, and we should. We absolutely should. And they're like, I've always, whenever I've entered this conversation, been like, yes, absolutely, to all of the things you're saying. And also this thing too, don't forget about us, and please don't exclude us from the conversation.
Right.
Which oftentimes winds up happening. Like, I've actively been told to stop talking about it before by people who are trying to, like, people who are trying to talk about sexual assault against women. And, but then me bring it up, like, bringing up the fact that it occurs to multiple people, like to, it can occur to anybody of any gender.
Yeah, and it seems to that, cloud that their is point, a, and they don't, you know.
Right. I'm not even attempting to cloud their point. What I'm trying to do in that moment is to, like, is to help connect and empathize with this other person, and let them know that they're not alone in the situation, like, when they're talking about it.
Yeah, I think that that is really important, and I'm glad we're talking about it, especially in the national climate with the Me Too movement. I think that that is something that is not getting a lot of attention or discussion, and it's, you know, I'll put myself in the same camp. Like, I don't think about that as enough when I'm, you know, contemplating Me Too issues, so I really appreciate that insight, and, you know, hopefully I'll take that and get better moving forward.
What I think also is that it's easy. We have an image in our minds oftentimes, or rather a sort like us in general as like a large society, have an image in our mind of who the perpetrator of certain crimes are. We have that. It's in our cultural knowledge. And we have also, because of that, a portrait of who we think the victim is. And if you, first of all, one of the things that, like, the post that I think brought about this conversation specifically, I was talking to someone about the fact that they as a human being are not likely to be accused of assaulting someone, because this was a white woman that I was speaking to. White women by and large are not like accused of assault ever. And it's not because it's impossible for it to happen, because it does happen and happens not infrequently. But it's because they don't fit the role of, the role of attacker, abuser, those things. Like, they don't fit the cultural image of that.
Right.
And because of that, we don't talk, like, that we don't, we, like, have a harder time acknowledging that they could have done it. So,
absolutely.
You
know, like, as a white woman, I understand that that's a privilege that I have, is that that's not something that I worry about. It's not something that I could, you know, reasonably conceive being accused of is sexual assault. I know that could happen. I'm sure it does happen. If it has happened to anyone listening, please let me know, because I would like to talk to you. But it's a much, much, much smaller chance of me being accused of something pertaining to sexual assault than someone who is coded as male.
Absolutely. And also, like, I also, for the listeners out there, I am a I am a Black genderqueer person, though for the sake of this, I get coded as male often. So because that's, I typically present as male. So I, for the sake of this, I will say that I'm a Black man. That is what people see when they look at me on the street. Right. We know that this is a true thing at this point, that I am far more likely to be accused of a crime, even if I was nowhere near the scene of the crime, as has happened to me multiple times, or like had nothing to do with whatever crime is occurring at all. I'm still more likely to be accused of said crime and even convicted for said crime than other people. Right. It's why Black people make up the majority of the prison population, like a disproportionate amount of the prison population, considering how small of a population we are, small in quotes there.
Right.
So when I was making that post, when I was making that statement to that person, I was trying to get them to understand that, like, from the point of view of someone who, like, quite literally has had the cops called on him, like a whole other side story, had the cops called on me for literally just being in a neighborhood, like, after a certain time of night. And I also live in Massachusetts. I don't live in the deep South, like, just to throw that out there. Like, I live in a place that honestly hasn't seen a lot of crime in the last year. I've looked at the crime stats. They're actually pretty low. In terms of, like, this area. So, and also against the national average, but whatever. So I've had the cops called on me for literally just walking my dog at night. I had a woman call the police on me because I told her that screaming at children in the street is unacceptable, which turned into somehow and I quote, a scary black man is threatening me on the internet.
Wait, you told her this on the street or online?
I told her that online, because I actually didn't witness her yelling at my sister. The whole long story, my little sister wound up being accused of shoplifting by this woman who was, I don't know what the fuck her problem was, because she was clearly delusional. Like, my little sister would not have done that. Like, and she was in the shop for 30 seconds. Like, there's video footage. She was in the shop for 30 seconds and stayed close to the door, and then they left. So, like, and also nothing in the shop was cute. So, like, really, and my sister has real good fashion sense, let me tell you. So she wouldn't have taken anything from that store, but she's also 14. So, like, there is zero reason.
Hold on, was this woman, like, the shop owner or a bystander, yes, a customer? Okay, the shop owner.
Yeah, the shop owner then proceeded to run, she didn't, it wasn't immediately after, it was actually like a few minutes later. My little sister and her friends were like sitting outside, outside the ice cream place, the local ice cream joint. Shout out to SoCo Creamery. Anyway, they were sitting outside there, eating some ice cream, and this woman like drove up, like parked in the middle of the street and started like swearing at a group of 14-year-old girls, my little sister being one of them, accusing my little sister specifically, and not her two white friends, of course, of stealing something from the store, even though my little sister like
didn't do that. And so you confront the shop owner online, and that turns into being threatened by a scary black man.
Exactly.
So that's
exactly that's which
clearly inhabit a body that makes you more likely to be accused of crime in general. But because of the way you're coded as male, you are much more likely to be accused of sexual assault as someone who is understood to be female. And that has actually happened to you. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you what that experience was like when you were accused online of being of sexually assaulting another person. And you told me that led to people disbelieving you. It led to you losing your job. I mean, and this is all because of public online accusation. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So people didn't believe my side of the story. And part of that has to do with the fact that he talked about it openly first. For some reason, that's just a way that people's brains work. Like, the first person to accuse the other is the one that they're going to believe most often. Mm-hmm. Even if that person has no, like, there has zero proof and that has nothing really to show for anything that happened. Whereas I literally have a doctor's thing that does say why I went in that one day in particular.
Right.
Like, why I was there that one night. It may not say that I was assaulted, but it definitely says that, like, I was in there for rectal tearing, like, which is.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you feel like he accused you, like, because you said this happened. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to the police, but you need to seek help. And do you feel like he then accused you publicly as a precautionary measure?
Like, I think so. I think that was it.
I'm just wondering if it was strategic, you know, like I don't want to be accused. So I'm just going to point the finger first because I feel like that might be coming and I want to get ahead of it. And that does seem like.
Yeah, honestly, I think so. I really do think that that was why he did it. And like, I admittedly, like, I didn't have many friends in that particular area because it's an hour north of me. I don't frequently go up there, but at the time I lived up there, and whatever, but that, I do think that he spread it about online and he did that for a reason. I think he did that because it would have been very easy for me, and I had proof too, and he knew that I probably would, like, because there was, with the amount of blood that there was, there's no way that he didn't notice it. Like, there's no way that didn't also get on him too. So, like, he knew that it had happened, and also he wasn't, like, out of his mind drunk or anything, so he would have remembered. Like, so all of that, he knew that that happened. He knew that I could tell somebody. He knew that I could easily also just have gone to the police. And I should also say that the reason that I didn't go to the police is because, at the end of the day, what would be the point? Like, why go to the police when I know what's going to happen is people aren't going to believe me. One, people might laugh at me like that other cop, which is, like, that's happened for other things that were, like, less serious, basically. But, like, for authority figures to be so dismissive of those complaints is really the reason that I didn't say anything, that I didn't publicly, that I didn't publicly go to the police and tell them and do all of this. And, like, also because I would have had to see him over and over again.
Yeah. And when the recourse open to you is something that, I mean, realistically, you wouldn't have seen justice had you gone to the police. And I can't imagine, like, frankly, I would have done the same thing if I were you in that position. Like, I see myself making that exact same decision. But I'm wondering, like, what the experience was like of being falsely accused of something as heinous as sexual assault.
Well, got super depressed. That's thing one, because along with being accused of that, even though I told people that it wasn't true, that didn't happen. The people who know me the best knew that it didn't happen. They knew that it, like, for a thousand different reasons. But the people who, like, I'd met recently who hadn't known me for years, like, they turned on me incredibly quickly. Like, it was almost immediate. Even though, like, his accusation made no fucking sense. Like, anyone who knows me as a person knows, and this has come up later in, like, other things, like, that woman who called the cops on me for, like, saying something to her on the internet, the cop that she was speaking to went to high school with me and, like, ultimately didn't file her report, but that's another story. Didn't file her report against me because he knew that that didn't sound right, because he knew me. Like, I'm not a violent person. Even when someone does threaten my family, I might get a little verbally salty here and there, but, like, I'm not a violent person, and I never have been.
So it mm-hmm. was shocking to you then that people were giving these accusations credence?
Yes, it really was, but also at the same time it wasn't, because this is how it works, and also sadly this is how racism works as well. Like, I'm as sad as it is to say, I'm used to it. Used to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the race of the man who was accused?
White.
You? Okay.
Yeah. As a fun aside, all of my exes have been white. But that's that's a whole other story for another day. Being accused by a white person of assault is, like, that. And also, actually, the other component to that is that there is a societal stereotype of black men that we are more aggressive than white men, that we are all of these things coming, and all of these, by the way, come directly from slavery, like, and have continued from then to now, like, just straight on through. Mm-hmm. And that is also the reason that people believed him. Like, if they didn't already think that black people were capable of Like, that I, as a black man, even though I am a nonviolent person, even though I'm an honest person, even though, like, all of those things, that they would believe him over me when he had no proof. I did have proof. I had hospital things and all of that. And they would still believe him. Ultimately, it comes from a desire to believe that old belief and not to look at the actual facts, which is a thing that we need to do more as a society. We tend to not actually examine a whole lot of those ideas that we have. It doesn't usually come up as a thing that we should do, even though it is a thing that literally every person on the planet should be doing. Like, one of the things that I am always forever getting into arguments about is with other gay men, is that, like, a lot of gay men will just be like, oh, straight up, I don't date black people, just never. Which to some, I'm imagining, is sounding just like a normal statement, which is sad, which is sad, because that person literally just said, this entire race of people has nothing to offer me romantically. An entire race of people. Yeah. Right? Like, just that's a giant sweeping generalization. It is also patently not true. We have, like, at this point, I'm sure most people have seen Black Panther and have had this thought already of Michael B. Jordan. Yes. And he is a proud black man. So, see, it would happen probably for a lot of people. So it's a dumb statement to begin with, because it's not true. And what it, like, the overall implication is that this whole group of people has nothing to offer me. All of these people are exactly the same and all of that.
I'm glad you mentioned Black Panther, because one of the things I wanted to bring up is in speaking to how unintimidating I find you and unaggressive I find you. It's like, you're the comic. You're the guy that, or you're the
person.
You're the person that loves comic books. You know, like, mm-hmm. you're that person. And there's just, like, there's a sweetness and an innocence to you. And there's just zero aggression that I sense. And or have ever sensed in speaking to you or communicating you on any platform.
I literally have written children's books. What? Like, I have written and illustrated children's books and, like, published them myself because I wanted to, like, have a message to give to children. That's about beautiful. About literal self-acceptance. So what, like, how does that image that people have of me go from that to, oh, this kid clearly, like, he clearly raped him, like, which, like, I don't know how it goes from how it goes from that to the other. It just doesn't make sense to me. Probably because I don't think of people that way. Yeah. And I would take into account someone's personality. I wouldn't take, like, yes, I also take into account societal factors, because I studied social psychology. It's a thing that I'm going to do for all of time. Because I've done that, like, I'm not going to make those assumptions about people, but I may know what they are in the back of my mind. I may have, like, this person is behaving like this. And if I recall correctly, it is because of X, Y, and Z cultural fact and, like, things like that. I have thoughts like that all the time. I also do have some preconceived notions, and I've been working on them. So, like, I'm not pointing the finger at other people to be like, oh, y'all need to do some work. I'm perfect. Meow. No, I have shit that I need to figure out. Like, I I've been working on it in general. And I think that other people need to examine those things, especially things like I would never date a black person, I would never date an Asian person, things like that. Yeah. Like, people should examine things like that and figure out where that comes from. And usually what people will find, and I think this might be why people don't ask themselves this, is that that didn't come from them. That did not come from just inside them. It came from the messages we get as a larger cultural thing, which would mean that that's a thing that we have to pay attention to, which is terrifying because there's so much of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Switching gears a little,
it's a lot.
It is a lot. And I feel like we're touching on a lot of important subjects. I'm running a little short on time, but I wanted to ask you about how it was that you came to lose your job through the public accusations.
Okay, so what happened there was so the way that job works is, and I still technically have that job. I lost a contract to work with a specific school, and what happened there is that the administration of that school heard about the accusation, and they're just like, yeah, this contract's not going to work out for us. So they just voided the contract.
And wow.
Which led to me not being able to work at that place. And they just, yeah, it was.
So through that one accusation, your friendships were compromised, your professional.
A lot of them ruined.
Compromised. Oh, ruined. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the weight of that accusation is so heavy. Mm-hmm. And I'm so deeply regretful and sorrowful that you had to face that when you didn't do anything. You know, if anything, you were assaulted and then had the grace not to press charges, which I don't even know if that's grace. I don't know what the word for that is, but I think it was a huge fucking favor to that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then to be accused on the heels of that and suffer the repercussions of an accusation is reprehensible. And I'm really sorry that happened to you. And I'm really grateful that you're willing to talk about it. And hopefully it's something we can all learn from. I think I've learned a lot from this interview already. I feel like I've learned about the way in mm-hmm. which same-sex assaults are under-discussed, under-reported, under-appreciated, and under-respected, and they should be a part of this conversation. I mean, I've always got so much to learn regarding racism and preconceived judgments, and I'm really grateful for the light that you've shed on that as well. And yeah, in terms of the accusation, I mean, just that alone, the power that that can wield mm-hmm. is pretty staggering.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that the slightly fortunate thing about working an hour away, even though like this county is weird just in general, in that like we do refer to it as like I don't really care about saying where I am. We do refer to it as like the place I am right now as the Southern Berkshires. And then there's the Central Berkshires, and then there's the Northern Berkshires. And like the line between each one of those is very distinct. So the contract I lost was in the Northern Berkshire area. That has not, that didn't affect anything like south of there. So I didn't lose like my entire career wasn't rocked by that. Fortunately, mm-hmm. fortunately, but like it could have been.
Absolutely.
So I feel fortunate that like I feel fortunate that I'm able now, especially to talk about this and hopefully give a little more insight and also a little bit to help people maybe in the Facebook group understand where I'm coming from, because I feel like occasionally I sound like I'm coming out of left field. Sound a little accusatory sometimes, and I feel bad.
I think you're very eloquent, and actually there are a lot of heated and passionate discussions happening in the Facebook group, and I always appreciate your contributions. I find them very insightful.
Hey, excellent. I'm always glad to offer them. Yeah, always glad to offer.
Speaking of your insight, how can people get more of it?
Alrighty. Yeah, so if you would like to listen to any of my shows, I have 3 podcasts at the moment, starting a 4th soon because I'm insane and I don't know why I'm doing this anymore, but it's fine. In the mix is my first podcast, which Chelsea appeared on.
Mix with a Y.
Yes, Mix. MYX. Yeah. So there we go. That. Here's this. Here's what I will do. If you go to the Deliberations Facebook group, if you go to the Deliberations Facebook group and search for my name, JV Hampton Van Zandt, what you will find is I will have posted links to all of these things so that you'll be able to find them. But I'll tell you what my shows are now, which are In the Mix. That's an interview show. And Criminal Musings, which is a true crime podcast, which some of y'all might really enjoy, I hope. and the third one is Red Wing, the audio drama podcast, which is an audio drama about superheroes. And if you want to interact with me, say on Twitter or something, I'm at Mixter Hyde. That's MYXTERHYDE.
Feel free to interact with JV inside the Facebook group Deliberations Room or on one of his other channels. In 2 days, Riley Page takes the stand in the trial of her accused, Keith Montgomery. We'll see you then.